Blog Talk Radio.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
And I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. And as I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Wait, to move Martin out of it for a moment. Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons, partly because just because he is, and because he's a real Christian, and he really believes in nonviolence.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and kiss here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Right now.
Judge us, simply call down. Oh, you know Mama, talk to me. You can't see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
Right on. Right on.
I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, born out in sweet streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweet streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music, sweet streets like Shakespeare wrote portraits, sweet streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of a hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And when you do this, you've mastered the length of life. This onward push to the end of self-fulfillment is the end of a person's life. Now, don't stop here, though. You know, a lot of people get no further in life than the length. They develop their inner powers. They do their jobs well. Do you know they try to live as if nobody else lives in the world but themselves? And they use everybody as mere tools to get to where they are going. They don't love anybody but themselves. And the only kind of love that they really have for other people is utilitarian love. You know, they just love people that they can use. A lot of people never get beyond the first dimension of life. They use other people as mere steps to which or by which they can climb to their goals and their ambitions. These people don't work out well in life. They may go for a while. They may think they're making it all right. But there is a law. They call it the law of gravitation in the physical universe. And it works. It's final. It's inexorable. Whatever goes up can come down. You shall reap what you sow. God has structured this universe that way. And he who goes through life not concerned about others will be a subject victim of this law. So I move on and say that it is necessary to add breath to length. Now, the breath of life is the outward concern for the welfare of others, as I said.
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. This is just doing a special short version of the Cows. Wanted to speak with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. about homosexual activity. I was able to speak with him privately last week, and he shared some really interesting thoughts, and I wanted him to share that with you all briefly. I didn't want to take up too much of his time. Mr. Fuller, when I spoke with you, you said that white people tend to think of non-white people as boys and girls, and you tied that into how that relates to homosexual behavior. Could you share that with our audience so they can get a really clear picture of what you're saying?
Well, there is a system of white supremacy in place, which just means just mistreatment and domination and use of people in a royalist manner based on color. That's basically what it is. That's what racism is. It's just a variation of the of royalism, but it's based on color rather than on other things like lineage and who your father was and what your name was, I mean, 1,000 years ago, and certain sets of traditions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what basically racism is, and it's turned out to be the most powerful form of royalism in the known universe now in the form of what we call racism and or white supremacy. Now, in any structure that's dominant, you have to dominate the people in all areas of activity. If you don't dominate them in all areas of activity, then other areas of activity will slip away from the domination factor. And you have 9 areas, according to what I have written, that will just about cover most things. I think that's adequate enough. Economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Now, I call sex the 8th area of activity in alphabetical order of the other areas of activity. So that just comes up as number 8. But sex is the most powerful motivating force among people, next to the system of white supremacy itself. Because whatever the dominant system is, that's what people react to on the planet. So the dominant system at this particular time in history, and has been as far back as anybody can remember who's breathing now, the dominant system. That's mistreatment of people based on color, domination of people based on color. So the sexual aspect is the second most powerful motivating force rather than the first under this system, since the racist factor is the dominant motivating force among people, and sexual motivations are the second. Now, the racists, apparently, according to the evidence, have studied how people who are subject to them are motivated sexually. Now, if a male is a boy, which you are a boy, you're a little boy when you're born and whatnot, and then you get to be a bigger boy and whatnot, and at a certain point you reach what they call a certain degree of maturity, which is decided according to the social system that you have at hand, you're now entering the threshold of what they call manhood. So you go from boys to men. Females go from girls to women, and that's the normal process in most societies. So what the racists did was look at that and said, well, you when you have a system of racism, you only have one man and one woman category, and that would be the masters themselves. You can't have your victims of the system growing into manhood and womanhood. So if they start trying to be men, if they go from boys to men, now you have a problem. You have a bigger problem than you had before. When they were boys, they were completely dependent on you. They understood that they'll do your bidding, and they're easier to control. Same way with the girls who are trying to be women. But when they start thinking that they are men, you're not going to have but one man in the house of white supremacy, and he's got to be white. And you're not going to have but one woman, and she has to be white. So now it defies logic that you would allow them to go from boys to men. So if you're not going to allow them to go from boys to men, what will you allow them to do? Because they are constantly growing, they are constantly getting smarter, and they have a natural tendency to want to break away from boyhood and to become men. So what you do is divert them away from wanting to become men and have, if it's a male, have him go from boyhood to femalehood. In other words, he changes his gender altogether, at least in his mind. Then he's easier to control. Then you do the same thing with the female. Take the black female, and rather than allow her to go the normal progression of things, steer her in the direction away from becoming a woman and in the direction of becoming a male. In other words, she will switch genders in her mind. Now, her body didn't switch genders, but we can probably do some things that give her the illusion that her body can be made to switch genders too. Now, when you do that, what you have is confusion. You have added confusion. And one of the best ways to control people for a long period of time, particularly if you confuse them sexually, is through confusing them sexually, so that you have a male thinking he's a female or wanting to be a female, even if he's struggling and trying and whatnot and trying to do everything that a female does, but he doesn't have the physical equipment. But he's got it in his mind anyway. He's just determined that he's going to act like one and be one and do the things that females do and look at males like a female looks at males normally. And then over in the female column, have the female do the same thing. Only thing about it, she's not going to try to grow into womanhood. She's going to try to do everything that she sees males doing, including in the bedroom. Try to become an artificial male. And she can do this in her mind because the mind is very flexible. A person can actually think that they are a bird if they want to. But before they try to fly or jump off a building, it's best that they get their equipment for doing so. You know. So that's the way that works. And when you can get people on that roll, and when you have people subject to you, you can always propagandize anything. You can make anything look like it's the fashion because you set the rules for the society. So that's what's going on. I tried to be as comprehensive as I possibly could in that description, and I hope that people could understand what was being said.
Yes, sir.
So that's what we have now. We're heading in that direction now, full steam ahead.
And when I spoke with you, I said that, you know, the counter-argument that I frequently hear is that, well, there are a lot of white people who are also participating in so-called homosexual activity. And, you know, this is not something where they're just trying to trick black people into doing it. You have people who are born so-called gay or homosexual, and, you know, this is no trick at all. If it was, you wouldn't see all these white people going around and doing it and being mistreated because they are participating in these so-called homosexual acts. What would your view on that be?
Depends on how it plays out in the end. Now, if the system of white supremacy remains intact, then that will prove the supposition just outlined. That will prove that it's valid, that it is designed basically to support what is already in place. Otherwise, you would have the system of white supremacy would go out of business. There would be no reason to keep it in business. If the white people were serious about really getting rid of racism and getting rid of what they call all of the sexual and gender categories and all like that, because racism is an artificial category. See, just because people are of different colors doesn't say that they are members of a race. That's an artificial construct. No one is supposed to be a member of a race. That's something completely made up. So if you can do the same thing with gender. You can do the same thing with a lot of things. But you have to wait until it reaches a certain point where you've got enough evidence to prove the proposition that you made in the first place. Now, like I say, this is my concept of the way things are going because there is still a system of racism in place. Now, if racism is still in place, when all of the so-called anti-sexual, that's what I call it, behavior, comes to full fruition and everybody's accepting of it, everybody's participating in it or embracing it or parading it around and saying that it's the best thing ever discovered since ever, okay? Now, and you still have a system of racism in place, then that will have proved the supposition because ordinarily all of racism would disappear. But see, it's designed to lure. Now, here's where I based that on, the luring part. In the history of the system of white supremacy, there's a thing called whiskey. It was very popular, the use of it. Now, if you are a practiced deceiver, one thing that you know about the science and the art of deception, you cannot deceive people into doing things unless you are doing quite a bit of it yourself. If you're going to be what you call a real arch deceiver, and the white supremacists have proven that they are arch deceivers, they are very skillful at deception. So in order to deceive people, you can't get people to drink whiskey, and you're sitting there never drinking any of it yourself. So there's some historical record of this. So what they'll do, a deceiver will sit there and practice drinking whiskey under controlled conditions. You know, take a little sip, know exactly where the point is where you get good and drunk or where you don't get good and drunk. Then once you learn what they say, and some people brag about it in bars and whatnot, said, hey, I can drink you under the table, meaning they can outdrink you, that you will drink. I mean, that they will drink and you will drink. But when they drink, they don't get drunk. But you wind up drunk. Many males who have tried to deceive females into sexual activity, you know, back in the days when whiskey was a bigger thing than dope, used to get into the booth in the restaurant and start that process. Say, now what I'll do, I'll know she's not willing really, but she'll be willing before the night's over because I'm going to get her to drink some of this stuff that I brought with me. And he'll be drinking and she'll be drinking. He'll take a sip, she'll take a sip. Next thing you know, she's willing to go along with anything. She doesn't know what she's doing, but he does. Now, many a person, particularly pimps, understand that thing very well. Now, it's the same way with whiskey as it was used, according to the record of white supremacists themselves, in dealing with people who are called Indians. Sit down, Chief. We're going to have a Thanksgiving Day. We're going to give thanks for all of the wonderful things that have been done for both me and you by our Maker, by the great spirits. And in fact, I brought some spirits with me. It's in a bottle. You never had anything like this before, but you will want it after you get it. It's called fire water. It's full of spirits. It'll give you spirit like you have never had before, Chief. And the Chief said, well, what's wrong with just pure water from the river, from the great streams of our lands? Say, oh, yeah, but you never had nothing like this. This is something we made in a factory. It's got water in it. No mistake about that. But we got a little alcohol and a few other stuff, that I've added here. It'll pep you up, give you another perspective on looking at the mountains altogether. Might be good stuff. So he gives it to the Chief. And at the same time, now, the Chief is a little suspicious. So he's drinking right along with the Chief. So that means everything must be okay. So he's drinking. I'm drinking. Next thing you know, the Chief is under the table. Chief's not used to it. And you feel white supremacists, while he's drunk, or when he begins to come out of the stupor, says, okay, Chief, I got some paper here I want you to sign. I'm going to give you $22 for Manhattan. Now, when the Chief really gets sober, see, now he's angry. He wants to go on the war path. But he's already signed everything away. And what was the instrument for doing it? Deception through an act of using whiskey. Now, the whiskey, you know, that's working all over the world, and they're starting to do it in South Africa, in Thailand, and other places and whatnot, is sex and anti-sex. Oh, you don't need to be a female all the time. After all, females have to go through a lot of agony. Wouldn't you like to be like your brother? Well, I don't have the equipment of my brother. Oh, well, you can pretend that you have it. I got some stuff I can sell you in the store. Strap-ons, you name it. And you just get it in your head that you should be a male. Because males can get things done. They got privileges that females don't have. And you say, well, you know, I don't particularly, you know, the lady says, I don't particularly want to be a male and all like that. Well, it's something, you know, have you tried it? You don't know it. Don't knock it if you ain't tried it. And knowing black people, particularly in this area of the world, we like anything that looks like it's bordering on something new. Because we're so tired of everything that ain't new. And they won't know, we'll go for it. We'll pioneer, you know, we'll lead the parade, which is what they try to get us to do. Now, you can't get a decent place to stay. You can't get a decent job. But if you want to lead the gay parade and you're black, they will reserve a spot for you. If you don't believe it, try it. That's what I mean by evidence of what I'm talking about. The record shows this. And they start with who? The youngest, okay, always work with them in the choir and churches and whatnot. And they do it through the most intelligent of black people. They don't start with the fellow sitting there with the wine bottle in front of the liquor store who's 40 years old. Because he's a black male. That's why he's drinking. He's been disallowed to ever be a man, and he knows he'll never be one. He'll always be a boy. And that is tearing him up inside. That's why he left his wife, left his children, and all like that. I mean, he gave up on everything and started drinking. That's why he's sitting on the curb out there. Because he's still struggling to be a man, and he will fight people right there in that parking lot about his manhood. So you can't hardly get to him. Even when he's drunk. You say, oh, man, get away from me. Don't be feeling on me. I got this big hip woman out here, you know, this big leg woman out here, you know. You know, if I want to do something like that, that's who I'm going to get with. I don't want you. Get your old rough, dirty hands off of me, you know. Man, I like women, you know. I'm a man, you know. I'm a man. Look at me. I'm a man, you know. I don't want no man. Even when I was in the joint, I didn't want one. See, that's the way he'll talk. He's 40 years old, okay. But what do? They go around and get the teachers and the guys who are going into the ministry, and that's where they spread that gospel among black intellectuals. Because the street dude, see, he's still struggling. I mean, he ain't going to never make it, because you can't be a man under the system of white supremacy. You got to remain a boy or turn into a female.
Mm-hmm.
By turning into a female, I mean having the kind of ideas about the opposite sex that a female has,
mm-hmm.
but you a male. But you got the same idea about a male as your sister has. You trying to outdo her. You trying to take your sister's boyfriend. That's the way the white supremacists want it.
Hmm. My co-host, I believe it's here, she is a non-white female, and she is 10 years old, but she has been studying your work, and she understands that there is a system of racism, white supremacy. I was hoping she could ask some questions as well. Are you there, Justice?
Hello?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Did you... Sorry about the misunderstanding.
Do you have some questions you would like to ask Mr. Fuller?
Not at this moment.
Okay. I will,
Well, she can think about what I said. See, here again, codification is about not taking Neely Fuller's word for anything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to just walk around and take a look. See, just don't jump into things. Just walk around and take a look and see if it doesn't start adding up. Because that's what I do. I don't jump to a conclusion and then go around trying to bombard people with the conclusion I jump to.
Hmm.
I just go around and see if there's evidence of what I think might be happening.
Hmm.
In fact, I challenge, you might say, if you want to use that term, I say questioning, it's not a challenge. If I have a concept, I'll go around and question the concept that I have before I even reveal it. And see, you know, well, something is going on. Now, why is this happening? Why here? Why now? How come it wasn't happening, you know, 60 years ago? Why is it happening now? And why is it happening involving black people on this scale?
Mm.
See what I mean? And I'm saying now, someone must have thought it up, or it wouldn't be happening, because it's something that's happening between people.
Mm.
And anything that black people do, the white supremacists always have something to do with it.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's not going to be happening in the first place. If it's something that's bad for their business, they will cut it off. They'll put a stop to it. But if it's something that they think is good for their business, they'll not only let it roll, they will support it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard white supremacists argue about white people engaging in what we call homosexuality or gayism or lesbianism and whatnot. And that's another thing, even the terms don't add up, because I've even asked the questions, which is what you do in any kind of research. Why are gay people called gay? Nobody answers that. Is it named after a person, Mr., you know, Frank Joshua J., gay or what, you know, who started it, you know, or who promoted it, who had an organization by that name and it was named after him? I can see that. But it's just, you know, all of a sudden, gay. What does that mean? And then you say gays and lesbians. Then you add another one, transgender. Gays, it started off just being gays, then lesbians, then transgender. So one legitimate question is, where is the cutoff point? See what I mean? And another thing, is a lesbian gay? Why do you say gays and lesbians? I mean, you know, these are just questions, logical
right.
questions.
Right.
If you got a big sign out and you're carrying it around and telling everybody to join in and support it and contribute some money to it and all like that, people should know what they're contributing money to.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And another thing, where is the payoff? Now, if it's an improvement over what we call traditional sex, because they call it alternative, that's another term. This is a alternative, you know, meaning something that's different from the usual or something that's various, a variation of the basic. Well, then you ask several questions there. Well, is there anything incorrect about the basic? And a person might say, no, but this is an alternative, of course. You know, for people who just got tired of the basics, want to do something different. What's wrong with variety? What's wrong with diversity, diverting from one thing to another? Well, maybe nothing, but let's examine it. Examine it for what? To see if it is an improvement over what you already had. And if so, justify it. By showing, by example, where's the improvement? Which one of these, see, when you start talking about homosexuality or lesbianism, these are not just abstract words. These are talking about, you have to do certain things to qualify. So what are these things that you do?
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro, back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food because he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, we got a good house here, the house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, that house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here?
I mean, this is what you say.
I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts, our Navy, that's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful in nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and cause you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When you want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back, to keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. as Reverend Cleve pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know, he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send him to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a literal education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, a so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him. Make him a celebrity. And then he becomes a spokesman for Negroes and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is The method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders began to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money, and then they accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King, and King started attacking Roy, and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature begin to attack each other, they begin to lose their control of the Negro masses. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They was talking about, we're going to march on Washington. By the way, right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and buzz them upside their head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television and said, this is a moral issue. That's when he said he's going to put out a civil rights bill. And when he mentioned civil rights bill and the Southern crackers started talking about they were going to boycott it or filibuster, then the Negroes started talking about what? We're going to march on Washington. March on the Senate. March on the White House. March on the Congress and tie it up. Bring it to a halt. Don't let the government proceed. They even said they were going to go out to the airport and lay down on the runway and don't let no airplanes land. I'm telling you what they said. That was revolution. That was revolution. That was the black revolution. It was the grassroots out there in the street. Scared the white man to death. Scared the white power structure in Washington, D.C. to death. I was there. When they found out that this black steamroller was going to come down on the Capitol, they called in Wilkins. They called in Randolph. They called in these national Negro leaders that you respect and told them, call it off. Kennedy said, look, y'all letting this thing go too far. And old Tom said, boss, I can't stop it because I didn't start it. I'm telling you what they said. They said, I'm not even in it, much less at the head of it. They said, these Negroes are doing things on their own. They're running ahead of us. And that old shrewd fox, he said, well, if you all aren't in it, I'll put you in it. I'll put you at the head of it. I'll endorse it. I'll welcome it. I'll help it. I'll join it. A matter of hours went by. They had a meeting at the Carlisle Hotel in New York City. The Carlisle Hotel is owned by the Kennedy family. That's the hotel Kennedy spent the night at two nights ago. Belongs to his family. A philanthropic society headed by a white man named Stephen Currier called all the top civil rights leaders together at the Carlisle Hotel and told them that by you all fighting each other, you're destroying the civil rights movement. And since you're fighting over money from white liberals, let us set up what's known as the Council for United Civil Rights Leadership. Let's form this council, and all the civil rights organizations will belong to it, and we'll use it for fundraising purposes. Let me show you how tricky the white man is. And as soon as they got it formed, they elected Whitney Young as the chairman. And who do you think became the co-chairman? Stephen Currier, the white man. A millionaire. Powell was talking about it down at the Cobo today. This is what he was talking about. Powell knows it happened. Randolph knows it happened. Wilkins knows it happened. King knows it happened. Every one of that so-called Big Six, they know what happened. Once they formed it, with the white man over it, he promised them and gave them $800,000 to split up between the Big Six and told them that after the march was over, they'd give them $700,000 more $1.5 million split up between leaders that you've been following, going to jail for, crying crocodile tears for, and they've nothing but Frank James and Jesse James and what you call it, brothers. Soon as they got the setup organized, the white men made available to them top public relations experts. Opened the news media across the country at their disposal. And then they begin to project these big six as the leaders of the march. Originally, they weren't even in the march. You was talking this march talk on Hastings Street. Is Hastings Street still here? On Hastings Street. You was talking the march talk on Lenox Avenue. And down on, Fillmore Street. And Central Avenue. And 42nd Street and 63rd Street. That's where the march talk was being talked. But the white man put the big six ahead of it, made them the march. They became the march. They took it over. And the first move they made after they took it over, they invited Walter Reuther, a white man. They invited a priest, a rabbi, and an old white preacher. Yes, an old white preacher. The same white element that put Kennedy in power, labor, the Catholics, the Jews, and liberal Protestants, same clique that put Kennedy in power joined the March on Washington. It's just like when you got some coffee that's too black, which means it's too strong. What you do? You integrate it with cream. You make it weak. If you pour too much cream in, you won't even know you ever had coffee. It used to be hot, it becomes cool. It used to be strong, it becomes weak. It used to wake you up, now it'll put you to sleep. This is what they did with the March on Washington. They joined it. They didn't integrate it. They infiltrated it. They joined it. Became a part of it. Took it over. And as they took it over, it lost its militancy. They ceased to be angry. They ceased to be hot. They ceased to be uncompromising. Why, it even ceased to be a march. It became a picnic. A circus. Nothing but a circus. With clowns and all. You had one right here in Detroit. I saw it on television. With clowns leading it. White clowns and black clowns. I know you don't like what I'm saying, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Because I can prove what I'm saying. If you think I'm telling you wrong, you bring me Martin Luther King and A. Philip Randolph and James Farmer and those other three. And see if they'll deny it over the microphone. No, it was a sellout. It was a takeover. When James Baldwin came in from Paris, they wouldn't let him talk because they couldn't make him go by the script. Bert Lancaster let the speech that Baldwin was supposed to make. They wouldn't let Baldwin get up there because they know Baldwin liable to say anything. They controlled it so tight, they told those Negroes what time to hit town, how to come, where to stop, what sign to carry, what song to sing, what speech they could make and what speech they couldn't make, and then told them to get out of town by sundown. And every one of those toms were out of town by sundown. Now, I know you don't like my saying this, but I can back it up. It was a circus, a performance. It beat anything Hollywood could ever do. The performance of the year. Reuther and those other three devils should get a Academy Award for the best actors because they acted like they really loved Negroes and fooled a whole lot of Negroes. And the 6 Negro leaders should get an award, too, for the best supporting cast.